You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Liza.
And together we are the Empowered Caregivers. Today we are here with Dr. Barry Jacobs, a Philadelphia area clinical psychologist, family therapist, and healthcare consultant. He is the author of The Emotional Survival Guide for Caregivers and the co-author with his wife of AARP Meditations for Caregivers and then the AARP Love and Meaning After 50 book. An honorary board member of the Well Spouse Association, he also writes a monthly self-help column for family caregivers on AARP.org. He maintains a psychotherapy practice in Media, Pennsylvania, and his website is www.loveandmeaning.com.
Dr. Jacobs has given over 600 presentations on family caregiving for family caregivers, community groups, and medical and mental health professionals. He was the national spokesperson for caregiving for the American Heart Association and honorary board member of the Well Spouse Association.
So, wow, Barry, you have had an outstanding career. I mean, reading that bio is just exciting. And obviously, you can share so much with us. But the first thing we want to do is dig right into the specialty with family caregiving, since we only have this hour to talk to you. So can you first speak about your personal experience with caregiving?
Sure, Kristen. So I grew up in Queens, New York. And while I was a teenager, my dad had brain cancer. And that had an enormous impact on my family, both during his illness and then afterwards.
Of course.
While my dad was sick and then afterwards, there was a lot of internal fighting within the family too about who was going to make decisions about my father's care. So I learned pretty early on that illness doesn't just happen to one individual in the family, it happens to the family as a whole. And that family caregiving, I saw my mom, who was his caregiver for about a year before he died. It just had a big impact on me. And it wasn't the first thing I said when I was 15 years old, I'd like to be a family caregiver specialist one day, but mostly I wanted to play basketball in the NBA at that time. But I eventually, through a number of different pathways, I found myself as a psychologist specializing in family caregiving now for over 30 years. And then it so happens that in my 50s, lo and behold, I ended up taking care of my stepfather and mother, both of whom had dementia. I did that for about 7 years. And, what I always tell folks is, I was a so-called family caregiver expert before I was caring for them, but caring for them basically demonstrated to me that I knew nothing. I knew very little.
Yeah.
And I learned an enormous amount from caring for them. And that informs my therapy, my writing, my speaking, my healthcare consulting, the whole bit.
Are you still caregiving for them?
No, my mom died 5 years ago this past April. My stepfather had died before then.
Okay.
I thought 7 years are probably enough. At the same time, what went on then is still, there are still things I think about, both the good and the bad. Unfortunately, sometimes what happens is after the fact, when caregivers have had a loved one pass, they have a tendency to dwell on maybe some of the harsh words that went back and forth rather than the wonderful things that they did for one another. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of folks that may be prone to guilt, I do think about the good things that happened between me and my mom in particular, but also some of the things that I wish I hadn't said, and maybe things I wish I had done that I didn't do.
I think many of us can relate to that. That hindsight experience, right?
Definitely. And I think you kind of answered this, but why do you think being a family caregiver had you go that route in your professional career?
So, I think all of us try to find work that's really meaningful for us. And what I have found is, I don't just see clients that are family caregivers. I see folks who have a whole variety of life problems, but when I'm working with someone who maybe is at the early stage of caring for someone with dementia or has a husband that just had a spinal cord injury from a car accident, their feelings kind of resonate with me. And it gives me a great sense of gratification to be able to witness what they're going through and to walk the path with them, for as long as they want me to walk with them. And sometimes I see caregivers for years while they're caregiving, and then typically usually a year until after the caregiving is over or will continue, that at that point we're working on grief therapy.
Sure. It does seem a little bit like a niche, though, and a niche that's kind of growing. Can you speak to how you've seen it change in the 30 years that you've been a therapist?
I think it is a niche that's growing because it really is being driven by the population demographics. I mean, our population is getting older, more, more folks have parents who are older, grandparents who are older. And so there are more of us who are in this family caregiving role. And, you know, when I give a lot of presentations, not just to caregivers, but to healthcare professionals, physicians, nurses, and mental health folks, what I find is the folks that come to see me are often folks that are doing this personally. And they want to hear about maybe how they can do a better job, but also how they take their personal experiences and turn it into their work and bring their experiences and make good in the world with what they've been through.
Sure. And obviously you have too. So it is something that I think those of us that start to identify as caregivers and specifically family caregivers can see sometimes a strong correlation with some of the other type of work we're doing professionally. I am a psychology teacher. And so I find that a lot of the caregiving I've done with Nicole, my adult child that I've talked about here, she's got autism, epilepsy, and an intellectual disability. So that is what turned me on to the brain. Prior to really digging into being her caregiver and her mom, I was a history teacher and I had sociology as a background and I liked social justice stuff, but really starting to understand the brain became kind of this thing I wanted to do to be able to understand my daughter's brain and how it was working and how to best advocate for her with her epileptologists and with the autism specialists. And so, yeah, I do think it's pretty natural for many of us to take what we're living in our personal life and bring it into the professional and vice versa. So. I'm also really fascinated by these other associations that you're affiliated with. Can you tell us about your role with the AARP?
Yeah, so I'm sure you're aware that AARP has really championed the cause of family caregivers for more than a decade. And I was very fortunate about a decade ago. They were looking for a psychologist to be on their, at that time they called the caregiver expert panel. And I was kind of an advisor to AARP to help them really serve their members either were folks in their above 50 who are caring for older parents or the parents themselves who maybe were dealing with whippersnapper adult children. Uh-huh. Who maybe trying to get too pushy with them.
Right.
Eventually that led to me writing for them. I've been writing a monthly column on their AARP website for about 8 years now. I've written 100 plus columns on all sorts of aspects of the psychology of caregiving. And, I failed to mention that prior to becoming a psychologist, I was a journalist. So, I always love writing. And so this is an opportunity for me to kind of bring my two loves together, caregiving and writing.
So what's coming to me right now is you said, I'm sure you know, and we do a little bit about AARP being a leader in the family caregiving department, but I think because we came to family caregiving as parents to children with disabilities who are now adult children, I don't really know as much as you might think I do. And so can you speak a little bit to how AARP has had to kind of broaden and mold, basically they have to share the space, it sounds like, right? Share the stage with people who are caregiving now for spouses, for children with disabilities. I mean, because again, like you said, the demographics are changing. When I was a kid, if my mom had had a daughter like my daughter, right, she would have been put into an institution because I didn't go to school with anybody who was like Nicole because the families that had kids like Nicole were told, that she's going to be best taken care of. We actually had a family in our church where they were told she's going to be best taken care of if you send her away to this institution down south of Illinois, in Illinois. So I'm just curious from your lived experience, have you seen how AARP has had to kind of broaden and shift to share the stage?
AARP, number one, it's a big, big organization. It's the largest membership organization in the world. It has 38 million members.
Oh, wow.
It figured out that many of its members were caregivers, and then it was just a question of how to better serve them. So what AARP does is they provide a magazine that goes out. They provide a lot of website content. They also do an enormous amount of public policy advocacy. and a lot about on family caregiving in that regard.
Sure.
And I remember as we were kind of researching to do this show and figuring out, you know, what are we going to talk about? What are the issues and so on and so forth? I kept finding myself going back to AARP. And I know that we've mentioned it on this show before, that they are just such a wealth of information. And when Kristen and I were kind of, you know, discussing on what questions do we want to ask Barry, you know, we went to the AARP and saw all of the articles that you wrote, yeah. And we're like, oh my goodness, yeah. where do we begin?
Right.
Yes.
We're going to go to a commercial break here in just a second. But before we do, there's two other organizations and your role with them that I'm sort of curious about. One is being the national spokesperson on caregiving for the American Heart Association, and the other is the Well Spouse Association. Can you take just a minute to speak to both of those, please?
Sure. The American Heart Association is a very big organization serving folks who have heart attacks or strokes. It realized, like all disease-oriented organizations, that many of their family members of heart attack victims were very important to caring for their loved ones, and so they've been very supportive of caregivers. And I had the opportunity to be involved in helping them kind of develop a program at one time. The Well Spouse Association is a national organization that's specifically for spousal caregivers, so it includes lots of spouses of folks who. MS and with Parkinson's disease, tends to be folks in their 40s. They have support groups all over the country. They've been around probably 30 years, I think.
Okay. I'm realizing where the gap is that it's, you know, so I'm affiliated and connected to the Epilepsy Foundation, to Special Olympics, to the Autism Society. We don't have a lot of caregiving programming. And so it's really intriguing to, that's why I'm asking you about all these associations, because it's really intriguing to me that these associations have recognized that, you know, their members who are having heart attacks, their family members are also being impacted, right? AARP's got all these older people, their family members are being affected. So it's just really cool to hear how that's happening out there.
We've been talking with Dr. Barry Jacobs, a therapist and writer on family caregiving, and we'll be right back after this short break. Caregiver Show, and we've been talking with therapist, author, and national spokesperson Barry Jacobs about his personal and professional journey with caregiving. Barry, here is my next question for you. Do you ever sleep? In addition to everything that you've done to support caregivers, your resume includes writing 3 books. I mean, everybody has a goal of writing a book.
Exactly.
Right?
And you've pulled it off three times.
Yes. So let's just take a minute to talk about each one individually. The Emotional Survival Guide for Caregivers.
Yeah. So this is a book that published in 2006. What it is, it's a... I created a narrative of 2 daughters in their 50s taking care of their mom with metastatic cancer. It's a fictional story, but it's not a novel. I use the vehicle of a story to talk all about different aspects of caregiving. So we start with the mom getting diagnosed, the daughters being at the hospital, and we go forward from there. The mom living in one of the daughter's houses, the other daughter feeling left out. The sister, it's all a lot about their sibling relationship. There are also lots of other sections in the book which talk about other caregiving kinds of scenarios, not just, you know, dealing with an 80-year-old mom with metastatic ovarian cancer. But that was a book that in the caregiving field came out fairly early. It's still out there. People like it. It's a kind of book that you don't read if you just want to kind of find out where to find your home care agency. It's more about the psychological experience. It's meant as a long description of what the psychological experience of caregiving is from beginning to end.
Oh, I love that. And Kristen is in a book club, and we had talked about, you know, let's have them read a book about caregiving. And, you know, they are all kind of nonfictional how-to manuals. And I love the idea of a nonfiction story. That is wonderful. And the other one that you have out is the AARP Meditation for Caregivers. What is that about?
Yeah, so this is a book. It's not about kind of like sitting cross-legged on the floor. It's about meditations in the sense of reflections. So it has 150 stories basically, and lessons of care, you know, coming from my caregiving experience, my wife's caregiving experience with her parents, lots of caregivers that we've worked with in both clinically. My wife is also a psychologist. And so it's the kind of thing that you could read. It's like one or two page stories you could read before you go to bed at night. It covers lots of different aspects of caregiving, but again, in story form. I pride myself on being a storyteller, and that's because I think that's what really connects with people emotionally. And so that's what that book is, lots and lots of stories.
Oh, that is wonderful. I love that idea. It's kind of a chicken noodle.
Oh, yeah. Chicken soup for your soul.
Yeah, chicken. Yeah. Is that like similar kind of platform?
Yes, but much shorter stories.
Gotcha.
You know, these are just stories to reflect on. You know, it could be one text page with a little aphorism at the end. All of them are true. All of them are about there's a fair number of ones about my caregiving experience with my mom.
Oh, I'm sure you've got endless stories to tell. What a great idea! And the last one that you have is the AARP Love and Meaning After 50.
Yeah, so my wife and I both see a lot of older adults in our clinical practices, and unfortunately, you know, more adults in this country over the age of 50, and even more so over the age of 65, are divorcing. So the statistics are pretty amazing. I think the number of Americans who have divorced over the age of 65 has tripled in the last 20 years. And so we talk about why people divorce, but we also try to talk about what has to happen for marriages to survive the latter stages of life. And really, you know, when the kids are gone, maybe when you've downsized, when the income, the flow of income is less than it was, and everyone's got to adjust. But how do you turn to your partner and develop a new kind of relationship to go forward as you age together?
That's beautiful. I mean, and it's just intriguing to me how it's been really cool how you and your wife have worked together on this stuff. And again, taking experiences that are personal and professional. And I want to talk about, you mentioned earlier that you have written a lot for the AARP. And if you go to their website, we can find stuff. But if we go to yours, and so I want you to say how people can find your books, first of all, please.
I mean, my books are all available on Amazon. But if you go to my website, which is loveandmeaning.com, love and meaning, or one word, there'll be information about the books. It'll connect you to Amazon and to other platforms to purchase the books. But you also get a kind of little bit of a sense of kind of who we are. We have YouTube videos of some of our presentations, got lots of my AARP articles and Huffington Post articles on that site, kind of give you a little bit of flavor of the kind of work that we do. We provide information, but we try to provide it in story form as much as possible. So with the love and marriage book, the same thing. That doesn't have one story, it has three stories that we weave in and out throughout the book. And I think it just makes for more interesting reading.
Yeah, I agree. And it makes it more relevant, right? People can kind of find themselves there and connect to the characters more so than when it's just kind of a bulleted list of like, this is what you need to do to take care of yourself, or this is what you need to do to stay connected to your partner. So I love the approach you're taking. I want to keep focusing on these articles though, before we have to go to our next break. And I just was blown away by the number, but also the variety. Like, you had some of the standard ones, the self-care and the relationship toll, you know, being a caregiver, but then there was stuff on there about being a male, why we don't want to be a recipient of caregiving, why caregiving doesn't suck. So I was just like, oh man, I wish I had hours upon hours to read these before I talk to them. So we're going to have to take a break here in just a second. But before we go off, can you just share with us, where do you get your inspiration for writing these?
I get them from personal experience and from experience of my clients. I mean, I don't write about my client's stories. I would be breaking confidentiality, but I am doing, they stimulate thoughts about situations, especially when I see multiple caregiver clients who have similar situations. The post that just came out on ARP yesterday is all about living in your parent's home when you're caring for that parent. And that has to do with the fact that I have two clients currently who are doing that and are kind of miserable doing it.
Exactly.
And so it lent itself to this column.
Sure. We've been talking with Dr. Barry Jacobs, and he's doing a great job sharing with us his inspiration. And we'll be back in just a short moment to continue our conversation.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we've been talking with therapist, author, and national spokesperson Barry Jacobs. So Barry, in our third segment, we like to do powerful questions, and those are the ones that kind of push you to go inward and reflect on your personal experiences and thoughts. So my first one for you is, what is one of your favorite stories about a caregiver that you've met in your work?
So one of my favorite stories is about a caregiving family, actually. This was an Irish-American family where the dad had a stroke, and the dad had a good Catholic family that had 10 kids. And dad needed help. He couldn't live alone any longer. And so this was a family where they would have family meetings. There would be 8 kids in the room with 2 more on the speakerphone,
sure.
All their spouses, all their kids, and with the dad right in the middle.
Wow.
And what they would do is they would talk as basically a large family about how best to help dad. And what they did is, 1 year dad went to live with this sibling. The next year, he got passed to the next sibling. I worked with one of the siblings in therapy for a while. What happened in that instance was, my client was caring for dad, and then while she was caring for dad, her husband got prostate cancer, and so she went back to this family meeting and said, "Dad is, I can't really care for dad if I'm caring for my husband. Will someone else step up and care for dad?" And someone else stepped up. Dad went on to the next sibling, and they didn't get all the way through all 10 siblings because dad died beforehand. But it was the most cooperative family I have ever worked with, a delightful family. And, unfortunately, what happens in many families of caring for older adults is siblings fight like the Dickens. And this is an instance where these siblings absolutely cared for one another and cared for their dad and just worked together beautifully.
That is beautiful. That's beautiful. It actually is kind of reminding me of my own experience a little bit. We aren't the big Irish Catholic family. That my parents had too many problems getting pregnant, but they were otherwise the Irish Catholic family. And there's 3 of us, and we really came together in a way that I don't think our parents expected. When both of our parents got sick, they both had kind of long processes. And so my sister, brother, and I had to really kind of rally and for both, and then, kind of help my mom through her grieving process and then rally for her passing. And they are my rocks now. I mean, they are who I turn to. And, every day I miss my parents, and especially as I go through different challenges and transitions of my own. But I think, I've got my brother and my sister, and a lot of people don't have that. Because you're right. I think it can tear families apart. And it was just either by the grace of God or my mother's Irish superstitions. I'm not really sure, but that pulled us together instead of apart. So.
Well, Kristen, that's great. I mean, you're exactly right. There are many families in which caregiving together weakens the family bonds, and there are some in which caregiving strengthens the family bonds. And, you have siblings that may have not really spent much time with one another, that kind of concerted time for decades, and now they're working together, and they get to know one another as adults in a different way. And it sounds like in your case, it really strengthened your relationship with your brother and sister, so that they now are your rocks. Otherwise, right. I mean, they'd never have been.
Right. And you hit the nail on the head in that I'm the oldest. And so I always perceive myself as the mini mom, and I treated them that way. And there's a 4-year difference and a 6-year difference. And I think when we actually had to now come together as equals, they kind of put me back in my place. Right. But I also gave them some room to step up and take charge a little bit and show that they could be competent adults. So, yeah, it's been a really, really interesting journey. Let's hear a little bit more about your personal journey. So my question for you in these powerful questions is, what's something you took delight in doing as a caregiver? Like, what are you the proudest of from your caregiving moments?
I think the thing I think back on, and I pat myself in the back, which is what we want all caregivers to do, right? At the end of the day, we want to pat themselves in the back, is my mom was in the early stages of dementia, but she also had a lot of physical disabilities. She could barely walk, she had severe back pain, and she had kidney failure. And but she was also someone who had always been very cultured, had always taken me as a kid to art museums. And even though when I was a kid, I hated art museums, she would drag me through the art museum. And so when she came, moved up from Florida to live very close to me in an apartment about a mile from my house. And, you know, in the earliest, before she got really bad with the dementia, I would take her and push her in the wheelchair through the art museum. And, you know, we would stop and talk about each painting. And it was she absolutely loved it. And, I still didn't like the art museum all that much.
Sure.
But she loved the art museum.
Right. It wasn't about you. Right.
It wasn't really about me at that moment. No.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's a great story.
That is a wonderful story. And I know, speaking of stories, you have so many experiences and so many great stories to tell. But what is it that you really enjoy most about the work that you do?
I mean, it's really a privilege to be entrusted with family stories, to be able to listen and to provide comfort, and at, you know, at times when families are interested in this, to provide guidance and to help people kind of walk this path the best they can, and for me to have the opportunity to walk with them for as long as they want me to walk with them. I mean, it's really, at the end of the day, when people are able to say, you know, this was hard, this was really hard, maybe the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, but I'm so glad that I did it, and I learned so much in the process, and I've grown so much in the process, that those are the most gratifying words I hear, and then I feel like I've helped them get to that place, that's a very, very good feeling.
Good. Yeah. Well, and of course you have, you know, because that's just the nature of therapy, is being able to have that opportunity to have somebody that you can bounce ideas off of, who can give you some perspective or, you know, a question or a reaction in a way that you wouldn't have necessarily thought of. So that's awesome that your clients have had you. I'm going to shift gears a little bit. This is the social studies teacher and me coming out. Because of your experience, you probably have some really good insight about advocacy, right? And some of the things that you think we could be doing to help family caregivers more. So what do you wish that the government, employers, society at large would do to support your patients and the family caregivers?
Well, let's start with society at large. I mean, I think more Americans are having experience either directly or in their families of caring for a loved one. More people get it. When I first started doing this work 30 years ago, very few people got it. And so there's more empathy, there's more support for folks. But what I would like to see is society at large really grasp that almost all of us at some point in our lives are going to do this work, and that we need to have a society that admires folks in this situation and does all it can to support them. So that would be society at large. For employers, I mean, something very similar. I mean, you know, a lot of employers, more employers now are coming to realize that they want to retain their good employees, and they have to provide support and benefit and flexibility for caregivers so that they can go to a doctor's office in the middle of the day if they need to. But employers don't do nearly enough. They need to have specific benefits for their employees. A lot of employers are really afraid of bringing up their caregiver status to employers for fear that they're going to end up being discriminated against and not going to get job promotions, because the employer is going to figure that they're just not going to be available. And so employers have to work much harder to support their employees. And then on the government level, I mean, it would be nice to have more money. It's always like, we're talking about government, we're talking about money, right?
Right.
We're always talking about, you know, there are government programs to provide support to caregivers, small amounts of money to help them buy equipment, help them, supplies for a loved one,
right?
But it would be nice to have more support and to have some sort of family leave act that would enable Americans to take the time off to care for a loved one who's been through a medical crisis. like they want to, so that they're not torn between, possibly losing their job or not being there for a loved one.
True.
You've made such excellent points, and I feel like so many of them, Chris and I have had such long conversations about, especially the society at large. I remember sharing in our days of our autism journey, both of us have young adults with autism. Everything back then, 15, 20 years ago was autism awareness. Well, now we're all very much aware, right? And I feel like that's where we're at with the caregiver journey. Just that awareness, like, do you know 1 in 5 people in America are dealing with this? And do you know the impact that it has on their financial and emotional well-being? So I definitely agree with you there. And also in the employer part of it, that's another conversation that we've just recently had about, how do we support caregivers in the workplace. And what I found interesting today when Kristen and I were talking is just the fact on what excellent employees caregivers make, in the sense of, think of all that we have to do as far as managing time and advocating and communication skills, navigating complex systems. Caregivers offer some really great skills for employers, and so they shouldn't be ashamed to not mention that.
I mean, what you're saying, Liza, is they should all be given raises.
Right.
And promotions, because they have gained skills through family caregiving of organizational skills, logistical skills, problem-solving skills that mean a tremendous amount to an employer, because they can be applied in so many different ways in life.
Yes, exactly. And I know we're going to be coming up on another break here soon. So I want to ask our last powerful question that we like to ask every guest. And that is, what are 3 things you would like to say to all caregivers in the audience?
I mean, what I always say to them is caregivers' worst enemy is usually themselves. And a lot of the work that I do with caregivers, I mean, not every caregiver winds up in a psychologist's office, mind you, though I think they should. But what I see in the caregivers is folks are really hard on themselves, that they are very, very self-critical. And most of them aren't doing themselves any favors. They are often kind of beating themselves up for kind of minor infractions. We're all imperfect. So mostly I say to caregivers that they need to just abide their imperfections and know that on balance, they're doing a really good job. And that's called being human. So that's one. The second is, this is going to sound kind of paradoxical, but, lots of folks tell caregivers, well, you need to get help, you need to do this. Most caregivers don't want to hear that because they feel that this is their responsibility. They're going to take this on their own. And, it's yada, yada. You tell me that I need to take time for myself. I've heard that a million times before. And so what I say to caregivers instead is that I really want them to do what is most meaningful to them and to figure out a way to run this marathon in a sustainable way as possible. And if that means that they take some support along the way so that they reach the end of this journey that they've set for themselves, this marathon they set for themselves, then that makes sense. But I don't tell them that they should step away from caregiving when to do so sort of violates their every fiber. I say to them instead, I want to honor your sense of mission. I want you to do more of this. I don't want you to do less of this. I want you to just do it in a sustainable way.
Excellent. That is such excellent advice. And
I think it's great advice too. No, I'm sorry. Yeah. And I think it's just really super insightful. And I feel fortunate that we were able to get you here as a guest and have you be able to share some of this stuff with us.
Thank you. It's my privilege to be here with you and to meet the two of you and to have this, free flowing conversation. This is a lot of fun.
Right. Well, thanks. And as we told you before we started on air, is that this is our first live show. And so we have a call-in number. And if we have anybody out there in the audience that would like to call in and make a comment with us about Barry's conversation, if you'd like to ask us any questions or just share some ideas about show topics, the number is 414-369-3000. 4149-6005. Again, that is 414-369-6005. Dr. Barry Jacobs, it has been an honor, a pleasure. Like I said, there's so much of your stuff I can't wait to dig into and read. And so I'm really looking forward to having you back as a guest.
Thank you so much, Kristen. I'd love to come back. Thank you, Eliza.
Thank you.
This has been fun. I don't know why you have a block of cheese behind you, but I'm assuming this has to do with Wisconsin.
Just a
lucky guess.
Exactly. Yes. So Barry's on Zoom with us, everybody. So yeah, we were talking about the Zoom background. Yep. That is what we call a famous cheese head.
A cheese head. Yes.
So we'll talk to you soon, Barry. Everyone else will be back in just a moment. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, you are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we just spoke with therapist, author, and national spokesperson Barry Jacobs about his personal and professional journey with caregiving. This is also our first show live, and we're so excited. That means that we are opening up the phone lines. It's kind of a unique phone number, so if you have something you want to say to us, Barry's no longer here, but if you want to make a comment to kind of chime in on our conversation and debrief about Barry, feel free to call us. If you have a question or just, you know, commentary in general about what we're doing with this show, where we're going, topics that you think we should cover, then give us a call. I've given you enough time now to get a pen and a piece of paper. So if you want to call, here is the number, 414-369-6005. Again, that's 414. I know, it seems weird. You're not calling a person in Milwaukee. You're actually calling our station, 369-6005. Liza, wow, what do you think?
Barry was an amazing guest and such a wealth of knowledge. And I love the approach that he takes to addressing caregiving through storytelling.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it seems like it's kind of a no-duh, but I don't think it's something that we actually see very much of. And so it was just really refreshing. And I'm not kidding when I say I can't wait to go read some of his books. I almost asked him, could you send us a signed copy?
Yeah.
But then I thought, well, now I'm just, you know, looking for stuff for free. But I really think that reading his stuff is going to be interesting. And I think what we need to let the audience know, too, is that we are planning on taking a week out of every month. And we are going to kind of do a deep dive into various articles, various topics, political articles that might be out there. And we are going to start with some of Barry's, because he did tell us off air, he gave us a couple suggestions about things that he thought might be a good article for us to have the audience know about. You can read it beforehand. They're short enough. You can read them while we're talking, and then you can just hear our insight and questions and commentary on it.
Mm-hmm. And what was your greatest takeaway?
I think for me, there was a couple different ones. First was that whole fact that was like unfolding for me as we were talking about how these organizations that have been dealing with older people or really chronically ill people that end up kind of being older. So in other words, the AARP and the American Heart Association, that they have been thinking about caregivers because they've had to take a family approach. But we and the organizations that we've been affiliated with have been, it feels like a little slow to the call, you know, like the Autism
Right.
Society, the Epilepsy Foundation, I mentioned Special Olympics. And off air, I kind of mentioned that to Barry, and he pointed out that, well, what's happened in our lifetime in the disability community is that as people with disabilities have become adults, they've really worked for self-determination.
Right.
And it's amazing, right? I completely support self-determination. I'm actually trying to teach that concept to Nicole right now, because it's a pretty hard concept in general, even for typical adults, you know, or just typical people. And I can see where, right, we want to be able to give adults with disabilities and children and youth with disabilities to some degree, right, some self-determination. But I also want to make sure that we bring the pendulum back and we recognize that we all need a family and a community.
Right.
And so when you are the family caregiver for somebody who is an adult with a disability and they do need extra support for things they can't do themselves, then we need to recognize that this person has a family caregiver and that that family caregiver needs to be brought into the conversation the same way that somebody who's caregiving to an older parent with dementia or a spouse with MS or Lou Gehrig's disease. You know, and so it's really got my mind just twirling about all kinds of opportunities that we could get from bringing him to those organizations or people like him or somehow just building that bridge, you know, because that's what we like to do.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I couldn't agree more about the shift towards self-determination. But when the caregiver is involved in that role, it would be great to have that additional support. You know, how do caregivers help their loved ones with disabilities become more self, you know, sufficient, self-determined? Exactly. And, you know, what is our role in that? Because it's that can be a hard dance to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think you and I are both doing it right now.
Yeah.
And so it is a hard dance to do. And I'm not sure that I'm doing it very gracefully. I think sometimes I'm stepping on Nicole's toes and sometimes I can tell you she is stepping on mine.
Exactly. Yeah. And I am experiencing that quite a bit myself as of late with my son going off to college.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, he's figured out how to ride the bus. So now mm-hmm. he's taking the bus all over town. So, right. you know, mom's got to step in and like, whoa, what is right. going on
exactly.
here? And then I'm like, well, no, I did push self-determination, didn't I?
Right, right. But at the same time, so Caden's the same age as my son who isn't going off to college, but is now trying to figure out how to go off to college. We would be stepping in and helping them, right? And
right.
so that's where it does feel like, we are being shut out in a different way because we're talking about young adults with disabilities rather than just young adults that need some support and guidance from people that love them.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what was your biggest takeaway or what's one more idea you want to share what you hope the audience got?
I think, you know, the story about the family of 10 kids coming together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't really think about, you know, my personal family dynamic. Well, first of all, I'm thinking, how did 10 kids come together?
No doubt.
There's got to be one black sheep. I think he was being generous, uh-huh. right?
Well, he said two had to come in. This was pre-Zoom, right? Had
right.
to come in on the phone calls. He didn't tell us where those phone calls were coming from. One might have been prison. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Well, I just you never know.
A sense of working together and the whole taking dad mm-hmm. for a year. And then that made me think, oh, man, on my side of the family, there's only three of us.
Right.
So is it like every 3 years she's
right,
going to come
exactly. like a hot potato.
Yeah.
Digger.
Yeah, your turn.
Uh-huh.
So that would be an interesting dynamic. So my head kind of went down that rabbit hole. And I know we've talked about that before, about, you know, when the time comes for me to help and support my parents.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, we're winding down here. And so it's time to really reflect on our first live show.
It's been fun. I can't wait till we get some callers in and we can have some conversation. We've really missed being able to do that. So if you want to catch us next week, we are going to be on now Thursdays, 7 to 8 p.m. Of course, you can always find the replays on the Civic Media app, which can be downloaded on any app store or on our website, empoweredcaregivercommunity.com.
We know caregiving is overwhelming and exhausting, and so we want to end each show with a positive note. You got this, and together we are stronger. So stay connected to the Empowered Caregiver community. Take care.